Dr. Mead, there's something you must do for me. Something very important.
What is that?
I want you to put Felix's penis on me.
Come on, come on to the sickest show on earth.
See, drug-crazed hippies.
See, mountains of gore.
See, the finest smut the world has to offer.
Hear two film nerds talk incessantly about it.
It's Something Weird This Way Comes.
With Mo.
And Rue.
Brought to you in stunning, monophonic low fidelity.
This ain't the best centennial anybody ever had.
And here are your hosts, Mo
and Rue. The amazing transplant.
There was something kind of amazing about this.
There was. It was amazing. It's our first, I guess, our first real detective story. We kind of had a bit of that in The Beast That Killed Women, but this one actually felt like it, you know, Agatha Christie would be proud, you know.
Well, but, you know, there's something much more important that this is the first of. This is our first Doris Wishman.
Yes.
Now, I know that the credits say Louis Silverman, who was actually the name of one of her ex-husbands. You know, it was just one of her, you know, pseudonyms that she used. She used a lot of pseudonyms.
Yeah, I saw that. When I did a little bit of IMDb-age, I noticed that there were a lot of pseudonyms down, mostly male.
She used almost exclusively male pseudonyms because it didn't make any sense to be female ones. Most of the, like, this is one of those movies where she kind of did everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, she might have had a sound guy come in and help her or whatever, but really everything else she did. So, like, like almost all of the names in the credits are fake. It's all her.
That's pretty cool, though. She was prolific, and it's neat because reading up on her, prolific comes up a lot. And people kind of give her a lot of credit, despite, I guess, the genres she filmed. They basically say she's, you know, pretty much the most prolific American female filmmaker ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not even just in exploitation, in pretty much anything. She made a lot of movies, and I mean, most of them are awful. But there's a certain sort of je ne sais quoi about them.
There's a charm, but it's, and I don't know whether it's just, I guess, the feminine touch or something. This movie definitely.
Are you kidding me? No. See, that is a comment said by a man who has not seen enough Doris Wishman films. No, there is no feminism involved in Doris Wishman films. You know, I mean, well, some would argue that there is, but really, in my humble opinion, she is absolutely the most misogynistic female filmmaker of all time, and that's the reason why I love her. Even in The Amazing Transplant alone, you saw how like violent, you know, she was towards women.
Yeah, and some of it came, like, there were a couple of scenes that were, they kind of brought me back to Jekyll and Hyde that we'd watched previously and stuff, where it was off-putting.
Yeah.
She did have that, but you know, maybe there was a feminine touch behind that.
Well, there's a lot of she did a lot of stuff that after she gave up on the whole, you know, nudist camp, like nudie cutie thing, she started getting, like, her movies got really violent, and I mean, if you ask me, that's when her film started getting awesome. You know, I mean, she had shit like Double Agent 73, Deadly Weapons with the amazing Chesty Morgan.
Deadly Weapons. I've seen the trailer for that one on one of those 42nd Street Grindhouse collections, but yep. Like, the trailer didn't really draw me into wanting to see the movie obvious reasons. But
Deadly Weapons isn't the better of the two. Double Agent 73, which we're going to do in the near future, is amazing. You know, she plays a double agent, and there's like a camera in her boob, so when she wants to take pictures and stuff, she like whips her tit out and just like. Like, lifts it up. It's the most ridiculous thing ever. Yeah, Chesney's pretty amazing. But let's get into the amazing transplant. The first thing I want to note on this is how amazing the opening music is.
Yes, the music throughout was really cool.
But the opening music in particular is like iconic. You know, like it's one of those things you like. You know, if you listen carefully, like you'll catch it all over the place. Like it's used a lot.
It was really cool. I captured it because I figured we're going to want to play it at some point here, maybe even under what we're talking about. But it really drew me in right away. It was like, it was just really cool music.
Yeah.
I like that because it was, I couldn't figure out whether it was original or not because I can't remember the exact name for the person who did the music, but it's like a company name or something. It's like film music, movie music or something like that.
Yeah, it may have just been one of those, you know, this is music that was already made, or whatever.
Or production house,
some production type thing, but either way, it's great. It's such a great way to start the film.
Most dramatic opening I think we've ever had. Just very excited by this movie. You forgot stuff.
I did. I was so super excited. It had nothing to do at all with how like running late I was.
We're professionals, so of course.
Or how ill prepared I am for everything. All right, so the movie opens up with a naked chick playing a harp.
Yeah, it's like an auto harp. She's playing it like a champ. Her fingers are moving, not necessarily with the music, but.
Nope.
When it started off, it was pretty tight, and I was like, oh, no, her fingers aren't even anywhere near. She's strumming, and the music's finger-picking, but it was kind of a pretty song that was playing.
Well, that's the first thing you kind of notice with this movie, is that, like, the movie was clearly filmed mod, you know, mod sound, and everything was ADR'd after that, so it's really off-putting, you know, because none of the dialogue matches the lips at all. It's the music doesn't match people, you know, and anything. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, everything is just, you know, like, obviously this is the sort of thing that if we played the audio for you, you could tell that it's been ADR, but, like without actually seeing it, you know, without actually seeing a clip of it, you really don't get how
everything. Yeah. And at the end of the movie, we'll get to it eventually, there's this, the amazing closing sequence, the ADR is ridiculous, and there are a couple of scenes like that through the movie. I would like to note that another part of the movie, other than the music, that's amazing are the rooms. Like, just everything is so, I don't know, it's a 60s thing. Everything's really bright and really well designed.
The sets,
So, like, the various suites, the rooms that they're in, the opening room, not just her bedroom where she's playing the auto harp, but where we eventually find our hero, Arthur, when he goes to make the call, is just, it's very neat. I don't know, were all houses like this in the 60s and 70s, just like...
I think it's a Doris Wishman thing. Really.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's the feminine touch. She has interior design skills.
Yeah, but I have interior design skills, too.
I don't. Irony.
That is ironic.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Arthur, who is essentially the main character of this film, even though he's barely in it. The story revolves around him, essentially.
Yeah.
And Mary, who is, I guess, his girlfriend?
Yeah, it's sort of his love interest. What happens here is Arthur calls Mary because he wants to see her. And she's playing the auto harp naked. She's really not that keen on him coming over. There's actually, I find this happens a lot in the movie, people really don't want something to happen and then just kind of say, yeah, sure, at the last second. So she eventually says, yeah, it's okay. And Arthur heads on over. We are treated to a gratuitous shower scene. I guess she's getting ready for Arthur. She's actually getting ready, I think, for her mom, actually.
She's getting ready to go shopping with her mom. Now, here's the part that I always found weird, is that she supposedly lives with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's mentioned later in the film that she lives with her mother. And yet, like, her mother was nowhere to be found. Like, she wasn't anywhere around there.
Yeah, it was like she was out or something.
Yeah. You know, so Arthur stops by, and he starts to get a little violent with with Mary. And of course, this is after she tells him that she loves him, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, he kind of confesses his love for her in this awkward monologue.
Yeah.
And she's having nothing to do with it until, again, at the end, she walks in after, I guess, she's gotten changed for her shopping trip. And she's like, oh, I love you too. And this is pretty much where the plot starts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is you know, he ends up getting a little violent with her. And it's really funny because, you know, like, it's almost like this is sort of the general tenet of the Ruffy, is that violence begets sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he starts getting a little violent with her, and she starts getting into it. You know, and she's like, I'll do anything you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they start doing it. And, man, that was, like, the perviest way of saying it. So they start, like, doing it, you know?
They were preparing to make love, Mo.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
And then he strangles her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the best strangulation scene ever. Now, I don't suspect that any of the listeners here listen to any of my other shows, but there's the very first episode of No Budget Nightmares, you know, we talk about the movie Hip Hop Loco, so mm-hmm. there's a very, very prominent strangulation scene in that film.
Which goes on forever, doesn't it?
Which goes on forever. It's like 9 minutes long. And this is the exact opposite. I mean, this is as diametrically opposed as you can possibly get. He strangles her for 2.5 seconds. I timed it. It's 2.5 seconds.
You timed it?
Because
I was going to say 5 seconds. Like, I was like, it must have lasted about 5 seconds.
Not even.
Two and a half.
It's like 2.5 seconds. He puts his hand around her neck. She dies. He takes his hand off her neck. You know, I mean, it's almost like she has, like, an on-off switch in her junk. You know, just like, oop.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, either she has, like, a very brittle windpipe,
or
maybe
he might have triggered
an aneurysm or something, because it was just done.
I mean, let's not try to put any, like, real logic to it, you know, it's a Doris Wishman film, but you know, she just dies immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Insane.
And this just sort of kick-starts the story.
Basically, it's all paranoid.
Yeah, he kind of wanders out. The next scene, he's walking around and thinking to himself. He says, like, I better not look so scared. Yeah, I better try to act natural. But he can't, because he's just kind of a creepy guy.
He is a creepy dude.
Yeah, they chose a good guy to play the role. It probably wasn't even a choice. It was probably just a guy that showed up or something.
Yeah.
But he did what I wrote down throughout my notes as rapey face really well.
Yeah.
And he sort of had this creepy look all the time, but when it came to a trigger moment when he was ready to attack someone, his face just went disturbing.
Yeah, I called that switching into psychotic mood. But I think I think rapey face actually works way better.
Yeah.
Because you're right. He looks creepy through the entire movie, but like when he gets triggered, you know, he definitely puts on that rapey face, and you know things are going to get rapey at that point.
It's also accompanied by a great sound clip. It plays the same one each time, which is sort of this like guitar riff that ends with a brass hit. And then you know the trouble's going down. So it's great, these little cues to let us know, you know, foreshadowing, I guess. You know, she was very, very deep with that, I'm sure.
I'm sure it really just had more to do with she had one audio clip that she just used it over and over. All right, so then we cut to Arthur's mom, who's on the phone with the cops. No. Right?
Yeah. She calls the cops, but at first she's told that her brother-in-law, who is a detective, is unavailable. So she calls him at home, and he's there on this awesome phone. It's one of those phones that looks like sort of, I guess, an 80s or 90s dial tone phone, the sort of slender ones, but it's a rotary. But the ADR, the Foley or whatever, is ridiculous. It sounds like she's dialing this 20-foot wide phone with like this gigantic rotary dial, but it's just this little thing. And the actress playing Anne is the mother. Anne,
I'm glad you said that, because I just called her Arthur's mom through the entire thing.
Yeah, Anne, I kind of like this actress. She was sort of intense and hoity-toity at the same time. And she does a great camera look in the scene as well. She just kind of, in the middle of a conversation, just gazes directly into the camera while she's talking on the phone. And this is where we find out that she knows the police were basically at Arthur's home, that he is believed to have murdered Mary, who was his girlfriend, and her brother-in-law, the detective, is going to drop by and talk to her about it.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal, you know, that his name's Bill.
He's going to
stop by. Now, Bill wants to work on the case, mm-hmm. you know, but obviously there's a huge conflict of interest there, and it's funny how, like, he calls it into the police chief, and the police chief, that's like the first thing he tells him. No, you know, you can't, it's family, you can't work on a family case.
There's a great line there, actually, where the guy on the phone doesn't quite catch on. He says, you know, the suspect is my brother's kid, and the guy on the phone goes, yes, Arthur Barlin. Bill Barlin, sort of acknowledge that he's put it together. And he has to sort of debate for the right to work the case.
Yeah. So, but they allow him to work the case for 24 hours, mm-hmm. essentially. And there's a couple of really great lines where it's something like, you know, like this line about Arthur being a loner, and they found this address book, and the mom has this great line. She goes, "Girls, Arthur."
This scene's full of great lines, actually, but they're like, I don't know if I'm the only one that found them amusing. I felt like I was at the beginning. Remember in the 80s, and I guess in the 90s as well, when they'd release those sort of detective RPG video games?
Sure.
And basically you get little clues.
Point click ones, yeah.
Yeah, and there was one for Nintendo called like Deja Vu, and basically you'd get these clues, and it always started off with the person waking up and sort of getting the starting set of clues. And I sort of felt like that's what was happening, because she'd like come out and said, "Here's an address book. Maybe this will help." And he sort of says to himself, "Yes, this
you
might help."
You want to go into your menu and click address book,
and then she
examine.
She walks to this desk. She's like, "Take that extra set of house keys on the chest. You may need them." And he's sort of preparing for his adventure. It was pretty cool. This whole scene was really neat because, and also there's a moment of exasperation. When Anne, the mother, tells the detective that Arthur doesn't have any friends, he kind of like lets out this sigh of exasperation, like, "Oh, this is gonna be shitty." And the music through the scene is amazing too. It's
Arthur kind of reminds me of myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know,
tell me more,
Mel. This perverted loner who's who puts on a rapey face whenever he sees gold.
Can you snap a picture of that face and put it on Facebook for everybody to see? So
I'll see what I can do.
Awesome.
Maybe I'll wear my wife beater.
I'll try to do the same for you. we'll put our rapey faces on Facebook.
Rapey face. We're gonna start a new show called Rapey Face.
Oh Lord. Or just like an internet meme.
Yeah. Welcome to Rapey Face.
So
Bill goes to visit a woman by the name of Edie Stone.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because she's expecting someone else, but they never really go into that. Like, it's just sort of this throwaway line. Oh, I was expecting someone else. And you almost kind of think they're talking about Arthur, but they're absolutely not talking about Arthur.
Yeah, there's no way.
So they were friends in high school, and she says something about having not really seen him since then, and that was 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And she's sort of nervous. She's clutching at her skirt.
Yeah, so do the math here, you know, the 18-year-olds, you know, that's, you know, 4 years, you're talking 22-year-olds. Did anybody in this movie look 22?
I never put that together, no. They were all at least well into their 30s.
Yeah, the guy who played Arthur looked at least 36.
Yeah.
You know, like, he didn't look old, but he looked middle-aged, you know? I mean, even Edie Stone, who didn't look old, she still looked at least 27.
Yeah, totally. But like, wasn't that sort of the thing? If you have teenage characters, you get people who practically look 40 to play them.
Well, back then it certainly was. Back then it was more like if you had characters. I mean, well, first off, you know, because you need to find actors and actresses who can get naked, so they mm-hmm. have to be, you know, of a certain age anyway. But really, it was just a matter they would go down to the park and find a bunch of hippies and say, "Hey, you know, you want pot? You know, come be in this movie." That's how most of these movies were made, you know. So these, I mean, granted, you know, the women in this particular one were a lot more clean cut than they normally normally are. But yeah, so she's supposed to be 22, even though she looks 27. And then we kind of cut to the scene of this weird guy who we don't know who the hell it is. Mm-hmm. You know, just this dude. And for a second, I'm like, is that Arthur? I'm like, no, that guy looks way too old to be Arthur.
Yeah, he's like an older Arthur.
Yeah, exactly. He looks a lot like Arthur. It's creepy.
He has a giant moose head on his wall with the giant...
Like, everything about him is giant. You know, he's got that Great Dane thing.
Yeah!
You know, and they're just kind of, like, scanning around the room, and he's just listening to the radio and sort of explaining what's going on with Arthur, you know? And I love shit like that, because it's one of those great ways, like, and they use it a lot, where you kind of tell a bit of the story without, you know, like, a bit of exposition without having to stand there and have somebody...
Say it themselves.
...remember the line, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they either have somebody on the TV... talk about it, or somebody on the radio.
And he's just sort of pacing and listening too. So
yeah. My favorite is when they have the knowledgeable old man who just spouts off all this crap about that. Unfortunately, this one doesn't have that.
No, but they do have a great moment of continuity where they note in the news report that Mary and her mother had a prearranged shopping trip.
Yeah,
because that's news.
Yeah, that's newsworthy.
I thought it was funny when she mentioned it in the first scene. When they mentioned it in the news report, I just laughed. I laughed out loud because it was like, wow, that's continuity. They're remembering the shopping trip. This is awesome.
Ridiculous.
I'm amused by simple things.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's hilarious. Just so stupid.
Yeah.
So then Bill finds himself at another house where he's talking to a Miss Evans.
Did we ever get a first name?
Yeah, they never tell you the first name. She's just Miss Evans. You know, she's kind of reluctant to talk about Arthur, and then, you know, he gets her, you know, we find out, this is my favorite part, we find out that she was renting the place off of a guy named Dan Jaffe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody who's friends with me online, that give me, like video games or whatever, like, my screen name is Brian Jaffe.
Okay.
You know, and so I just thought it was great. You know,
it's good, yeah.
To hear the name Jaffe again, because, like, how often do you hear the name Jaffe?
Not very often. And
you know,
are you fond of horse riding equipment as well? Or because she had it all over her wall.
Oh, I was going to say, where are you going with this?
Mo, would you like to come over?
I will not wear a saddle.
Damn it.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
But, take a creepy turn.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, that's right. So the apartment. Oh, God, I can't. Talk today.
There we go.
Breathe in through the nose, down through the mouth. Yeah, that's right. There's all sorts of crazy, like, you know, like, it's clearly a man's apartment.
Yeah, and,
like,
and
like
she...
wherever they were shooting, you know, whether it be a soundstage, like, I don't know if it was intentional or if that was the only place they could get, but yeah, there was, like, horse riding equipment hanging on the wall, and she was like, oh, you know, it's not too girly, but I like the way it looks, so
yeah.
she didn't do anything with it. But she goes into her story. We find out that Arthur had attacked her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually during this rapey scene that I kind of noticed that Arthur's got some fucking talent, you know? Like, mm-hmm. like he got her clothes off in like 5 seconds, like 10 seconds, you know?
And that happens a couple of times in the movie.
Yeah, like this dude is professional level disrober. You know?
It's unfortunate the situations where he practices his talent, but,
yeah, well, I'm saying, you know, like me, like, if I had to take a bra off, like, that's the, like, the worst thing in the world for me, I've broken so many bras, like, I'm so bad at taking bras off, and this dude, like, man, like, this dude's, like, he had it off in, like, a second.
Yeah, and in this scene, he's basically sort of violently disrobing her very quickly. And she's mostly concerned about her clothes, because first off, I found it weird. Don't rip my clothes. And she sort of seemed like concerned when he made rapey face and started walking up to her.
Yeah.
And then the second he started like pinning her down and taking her clothes off, that was her concern.
Well, wouldn't it be yours? I mean, you know. Well,
I'm wearing a really cool Atreyu t-shirt right now. I wouldn't want to get it torn during my rape. But I also found funny about... I also found funny during this scene is when it started off, she made him sound like a passing acquaintance. So she was like, oh yeah, I know Arthur. But then...
Yeah, exactly. But in actuality, she'd only ever met him once, and it was by chance.
Yeah. And not just met him once, he attacked her. So you think that she would be...
A little less nonchalant about it.
Yeah, and she says she didn't want to tell the cops because she didn't want, like, her name in the papers.
Yeah.
But, like, still, I think that if a cop approached me and brought up his name, I would probably be a bit more upfront about my emotional hatred for him.
Yeah, this scene actually has the creepiest moment I felt in the entire film. After he knocks her out, because there's... Like, it's weird the powers this guy has over women. You know, he's almost like a he's like a rapey yoga or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or yogi. I'm sorry, I know what I meant to say. He's like a rapey Svengali.
And
so he knocks her out, like, and she's unconscious, and he puts her hand down his pants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I found to be like the creepiest thing ever. Like the idea of like making a woman put her hand on your junk, like,
while she's unconscious,
knocked out.
Yeah.
It just really blew me away how creepy that was.
He follows it up by nuzzling her belly too. So it's like this. It was just all generally weird to watch.
Yeah. The whole scene was just really fucking weird. And weird fucking.
Yeah. Hey. He's so clever. After this happens, this is when she says she didn't call the police, and she's getting visibly upset, and she's not a bad actress. Most of the actors in this movie are half decent, save for one, which we'll get to, but in my opinion. But this is where I noticed another interesting quirk of the movie, and it relates to the detective. So she starts sort of sobbing a bit, and she actually apologizes for being upset, and the detective shuffles his feet and says, well, I should go, and leaves. And I don't know if you noticed, he does this every single time a woman gets upset in his presence for the entire movie. He leaves. He, like, literally bolts. He says, well, I got something to do, and he leaves. Men. So I labeled the audio clip for this scene douchebag cop. And that's when I drew attention to it. I will point it out every other time because you'll be shocked at how often he bolts from a victim as a detective because she's upset. And she collapses after he leaves. And now the detective goes back to Anne, Arthur's mom. And this is
I kind of skipped over this scene. I didn't make any notes about it. It's just, like, all of these scenes where he goes back to the mom, they're all such, like, filler.
Well, except this is the one where he first brings up Dr. Mead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a passing reference. Dr. Mead gave Arthur an appendectomy, and the detective gets called out. He's going back to see Edie Stone at this point. So he goes back. The music is, again, awesome in a scene. Have you seen The Phantom Toll Booth?
I have.
Yeah, the music reminded me of The Phantom Toll Booth for some reason.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's very sort of 60s fun kind of a thing. Which is ironic, because of course we're going back into a flashback to an experience that Arthur had, or a woman had with Arthur.
Well, it's kind of funny, because, you know, like a lot of the music in this film is just that. It's very, you know, jaunty, you know, 60s fun music.
Yeah, sort of loungy fun.
Yeah, meanwhile, this movie's essentially a roughie about rape.
Yeah. Maybe they did that. It's probably what they found. Maybe it was just because it's all really cool music. I would buy this soundtrack. Maybe she actually put it in to break the tension a bit. Who knows if she was thinking that far ahead. But it does. It also adds sort of like to get all academic-y. It's kind of a juxtaposition. So when the scene actually happens, it's just a bit more creepy than it might have been if the music had been like intense throughout. But there's a great line coming up in this one. Basically, Miss Stone is telling the detective that she had actually seen Arthur a week earlier, that it hadn't been 4 years, as she'd said before. And there are a couple of funny things that happen. She leaves, Arthur comes to visit, this is the flashback, and she sort of leaves the room to get changed, I guess. He's just dropping by, I believe. I think he just dropped by to say hi. Or he picked her up and gave her a lift home.
Something like
That's how he got in the house. There's a great moment where she says, tells him there's liquor in the cabinet, but he kind of interrupts her near the end of it, so it kind of comes out as, there's some liquor in the cabinet, thanks. And it's just this really weird, awkward moment. I also love the fact, and this is so pre-internet, that she offers him a book while he waits.
Yeah, you can read if you like.
Yeah. Like, that seems like such a weird thing. I think I'm going to start doing that. So if somebody comes over to visit, I'll be like, just point to the bookshelf. You can have a book if you'd like. I'll be out in like 10.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. See, we want to make people better, Mo.
That's a really great idea. I think I'm going to do that. Well, I gotta buy a new shelf for my VHS, because, like, I'm overrun. I'm just overrun with tapes at this point.
Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, between picking up all of the Chuck Norris movies, which I own all of now. This is my first announcement. I officially own all Chuck Norris
movies. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And you know, a buddy of mine giving me, like, a box of tapes. Like, I'm just all completely overrun now. So what I had done originally is there were three large, you know, there was two large shelves. And then in the middle, I had two smaller shelves. So I just kind of put them on top of each other, you know?
Nice.
So I need to take those ones down and replace them with one of the regular size, bigger shelves so that I can fit all my tapes on there. But,
you should put one book on it and offer people to read every time you leave the room and they go up to find a book and a bunch of VHS tapes.
Yeah. Hey, I got a book. Go read it. It's somewhere up there.
It's like Brief History of Time or something.
Well, that was the next thing. You know, the next things I need to deal with, you know, as far as, like, my collections are concerned, are my books and my records, you know, because I finally been able to put out my VHS, but, you know, my books and my records have been neglected this entire time.
That's sad. You're such a visual person.
It is. It's really sad. I want to put out, like, you know, like, I've got some crazy records. You know, you got to put them out so people can see them.
Yeah. Well, we had a bit of a tangent there.
Nah.
It's cool. We're introducing people to our characters. I'm also a furry, so we should get the end.
It's not a lie.
I'm not lying. So back to the movie, briefly.
Before we get back, go on our next day.
Yeah, because, like, I already had a million other things going through my mind the second I mentioned my furriness. So we get back to Arthur. This is the flashback. Arthur gets rapey face again. If you're paying close attention at this point, you'll notice that there is a trigger, which we haven't really mentioned yet.
We won't?
All right, we won't. I like it.
Well, we'll mention it when they mention it.
I like it. Good call.
Put the suspense
on. Cool.
But yeah, you're right. You know what I noticed in this one? Is that, like, and this is what I was saying, that Arthur's like a rapey Svengali. Like, he puts her in a trance.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I mean, he kills the first chick, you know, he knocks out the next chick. Like, in this one, he put her in, this trance. And it's just crazy. I mean, granted, these are all just excuses to show tits, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, but it's just crazy. Like, I don't know, it's so weird. Like, the idea of being able to put a chick in a trance and then have your way with her, you know?
And she calms down, basically. That's her trance state.
Yeah.
This scene is second now among movies we've watched only to the acid eater scene in its creepiness. He tells her not to fight, and she kind of calms down, and the music fades out, and then this new music fades in, and it's really sweet music that has children singing, like, this la-la song as he undresses her. Watch it again. You'll be like, woo-woo. It's like this children's choir singing, like, la 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 kind of stuff as the scene is going on, and it's throughout the undressing and touching sequence.
I wonder if castratos have anything to do with
this. They're the producers.
They're the producers.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They don't have anything to produce with.
Oh, that was amazing. Good job.
Yeah.
Speaking of something to produce with, this is our first time where we get to see Arthur's appendage. I don't know. I noticed because I'm gay. But we actually, this is a scene where we
How did I not notice that?
Because you were probably looking at something else.
Probably looking at some tits.
But yeah, his pants go down, and I was actually shocked. Not only do they just do the basic full frontal drop pants quick second, you actually get some what I will call bonerific shots.
Some chubs?
There's some chubs. And I was kind of shocked because up till now, that's been very much hidden in movies, so...
Yeah.
So I got my moment.
This is later 60s, so cock shots aren't too uncommon, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's sort of, like, it's sort of this weird thing. He puts her in a trance to the point that she starts sort of sweetly making out with him near the end of the scene. Maybe you can just develop it. Call up Arthur. He'll help you out. Actually, we'll know how you can do it later on in the movie.
That's true.
Yeah. But this is, again, the detective at the end when she finishes telling the story. She finishes telling him, and he essentially just kind of gets up and leaves. So, yeah, he's like, thanks, bye.
So, you got raped, huh? Okay, bye.
Bye. Which is, I think, the most charming part of his character.
Yeah, like, even RoboCop had more compassion than that. You know? Madam, I will find you a rape crisis center.
I didn't even think of it that way. You are right. A robotic man is nicer than this detective.
That's because Peter Weller is amazing.
That's true.
All right, so next we find, we come back to the doctor who is sitting in his office.
The moose head man.
Yeah, the moose head doctor who is in his office, again, still, I guess.
Yeah.
Listening to the radio, which is apparently all he does. And there's just a little bit more exposition, nothing really, you know, too astounding.
Some lame news about a labor strike or something.
Yeah. Basically, before. Like, they just added some... Well, basically, what it seems like to me is that they had so much film they needed to use,
mm-hmm.
and they wrote the part about Arthur, and they're like, shit, we still have, like, a minute and a half of extra footage here, you know? And so they just wrote up some shit about some other news story. Which is actually kind of really like Arrested Development when you think about it. You know, like how, like you know how like they always played on that. On that movie trick where like you turn the TV on and it's about to play exactly the right thing. You know?
Yeah.
So what they would always do is they turn it on and be like, "Oh, I'm sure it'll come on right after this." You know?
Yeah, totally.
So it's probably one of those situations, but So we find ourselves back with Bill again. He finds a package for this other woman who lives in the same building as Arthur's mom. And so he goes to deliver it, and sure enough, she knows Arthur too.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows Arthur.
She thinks he's crazy.
And she has a great line. She's like, "I hear Arthur's in trouble. See? You know? I think he's crazy." This is also a really neat scene with... cutaways with the detective. Most of his reactions really have nothing to do with what she's saying. Yeah. So, like, she'll just be saying, "So I was talking to Arthur one day," and he'll be shaking his head and, like, in disgust. And then they'll cut back to her saying something else, and he'll have, like, this sort of serious look on his face. So they just had cutaway scenes they wanted to use. I think it was pretty funny.
Hey, you know, use what you got. You know, you only get so much film. You know? It's not like today where you could reshoot something a million times and just erase the file and copy over it.
This is when we get her flashback. Her name's Bobby. Bobby Revan or something like that. So Bobby is not very fond of Arthur, and we find out why. It's kind of like the other girls. So,
it's exactly like the other girls.
Yeah.
Basically, we've heard the same story like four times now.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, so Arthur showed up, got all rapey-faced. And,
he chases her up the stairs, strips her very quickly. This is one of the great scenes where the camera does a lot of swinging around, and a light was behind the operator, so you actually see the shadow passing over people. And she, at the end of it, you get a very, I guess, sexy shot of her ass as she's vomiting.
Hey, I mean, if you're into butt acting, sure.
She did have a couple of spots didn't she?
She did not have a very nice ass. but here's the best thing. I kind of made note of this because this is sort of common with these movies is that, and one of my favorite things about these movies too, is if you ever see a woman in one of these movies and you think, man, I'd love to see her naked.
Yeah.
Wait 5 minutes. She'll be naked.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. And she was.
And she was, you know, and whatever, you know, I didn't really care too much about Bobby, you know, Bobby's entire story was basically filler. Like there was no, it didn't really matter. It was an excuse to show tits and it extended the length of the movie by another 10 minutes, you know?
And it had that sort of extra sort of twist element. She's puking, which I guess you might think she's doing it because she was upset with the situation, but they eventually cut to a door opening and a woman sticks her head out. She's upset that Bobby hasn't returned to the room, and the detective stands up and disgustedly himself, he says, "I think I understand why you were so disgusted." And again, we have an upset woman and the detective bolts.
Well, look, in this particular case, it makes sense. You know, this is an lesbian we're talking about.
Yeah, so there's really no point to stick around.
Yeah, you know, whatever. I got no chances here, so I'm out of here.
You know, if the line had been delivered in a different way, it would have almost been like a sort of touching, gay, supportive scene, you know? Like,
exactly.
I understand why you were so disgusted, and like him being upset and like, good day, madam, or something. But no, he seemed pretty grossed out.
I would have, you know, I would pay anything to see this movie recut with a shot of Bill going, good day, madam.
Good day, madam.
Good day, madam. I feel for your plight, and I hope you do well. Good day, madam.
Maybe I'll try to do my best Bill impression and take some audio clips and re-edit the end of them.
ADR them,
that'll be fun.
Good day.
So we're actually sort of getting to the, I guess what you almost call a reveal.
Yeah, this is where the story starts to sort of open up a little bit. So
yeah.
You know, we got Bill, and he's, you know, Bill visits this guy who's been listening to the radio the entire time. And it turns out this is Arthur's doctor.
Dr. Mead.
Mead. And Dr. Mead starts telling about how Arthur's friend Felix had died recently and that he was really broken up about it and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't really go into too much detail about it. It's really just sort of, you know, he says, oh, I haven't seen him in months.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
He's very...
And makes some kind of, like, you know, vague comments about his mental state.
Yeah. With Felix, he says that Felix is dead of a rare virus.
Yeah.
And also there's sort of this strange talk of the fondness between Arthur and Felix, essentially that the doctor had seen Arthur at the time that, I guess, in the storyline, we know that they'd seen each other, the appendectomy time or whatever it was, and that he had become friendly with Felix, who is the doctor's assistant. They'd become friends after the operation, and that Felix had died 3 months earlier. And then the detective leaves, and the doctor sort of does distressed face, grabs his face, and looks concerned about something. We don't quite know what. But, and then he leaves, and we get to see Arthur again. We haven't seen him in a while. And he's going to go sit on a nice patio set.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Arthur's all, you know, I mean, normally we see Arthur, he's very rapey, and this time we see him, and he's mopey.
He's very emo kid. And he sits down on his patio set, sort of mopey in the corner, and a lady in a huge blue coat and a green hat drops by, and she sits down next to him. I can continue. Would you like to talk about the lady, or because I?
No, you can talk about.
Okay, she's a whore, essentially.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, like, you don't know at first.
Yeah.
You know, she just seems like, well, first it just seems like, oh, is this just some, like, slutty woman?
Sweet.
Yeah, so where were we? Oh, yeah, so we got this whore who doesn't really look like a whore.
No, especially with her clothes. They're not very sexy clothes.
No, exactly. You know, clearly it was cold wherever they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's just like, she's bundled up in this gigantic jacket.
And
you know, she has him come back with her, and he pays her. I love it. I love when they're getting undressed, and she's like the most impatient hooker ever. She's like, come on.
Come on, let's do this.
Come on, take off the shirt.
she's very, very pushy about it. She's, and the music is The music is really weird. I don't know if you noticed. I was very attuned to the music for this movie.
I apparently wasn't.
The music was strange because at the point that they actually start stripping, the best way I could describe it is it's a cross between a like 70s sporting event theme and a Pillars of Industry commercial. So it's sort of like one of those like 3M innovation kind of things. But they're stripping to it, so, you know, very sexy.
Archer Daniels.
So they're getting ready to get it on, but not really. Arthur's not that interested.
No, because she's not.
But let's just say that there's no trigger in this case. So up until all the girls have had a trigger, and in this case, she doesn't. The lady of the night says, you know, you're a shy one. Looks like I'll have to do all the work. And she gets to it. He's really not interested. This is a scene where we get a totally full Wang shot as well. Like, this was my scene. This is the one they put in for me. I get one every like 4 movies, so I'll go for it.
Full on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're gonna do a movie, and I'm gonna keep it a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously.
Yes, know, I do.
But I want to keep it a surprise for the audience. But yeah, but we're gonna do a movie soon that is all you.
It is gonna be a bit of a flip because you're gonna be instead of you going on about the nice ladies and me sort of going, yeah, I guess she was kind of nice. It's probably gonna be.
And be like, yeah, I guess his dick looked. Kind of okay, I
dude,
guess.
Dude, it was amazing.
It was the best dick ever. Man.
Anyway,
all right, so after this, we're going off on crazy tangents.
Today's tangent day.
Yeah.
He's
back
naked.
To Bill.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Bill here. He kind of has this epiphany. You know, he realizes... the doc was lying to him, so he goes back to see the doctor again, and I can't stop yawning.
just prior to that, there was a good line. One of my favorite lines is the Anne, the mother, and the detective are there, and the detective sort of announces that he could use a coffee. He's like, I sure could use a good, strong cup of coffee. Like, see, I expected like a Maxwell House tin to sort of spin around or something.
That was code for blowjob.
Oh, from Anne?
I'm putting thoughts in heads now.
Yeah, and Anne's character, like, throughout the whole movie, all she's really been doing is worrying about Arthur. And all of her lines.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, where's Arthur? And this is where the best line in the movie comes in, or at least the best line treatment, which is while Anne's worrying, he has the flash back to something the doctor had said when he saw him earlier. And they do that whole reverby dreamy sound.
Yeah.
But instead of echoing the last line like they would in one of those sort of flashback house moments when they sort of realize, oh, I know what happened, they just have the actor repeat it. So he says, in his condition, he could do anything. And then he has a house moment. And I'd like to also note again, Anne is worrying about Arthur. He jumps up, says, gotta go, and runs out the door. So he's once again found a way to abandon an upset woman. This detective. Bill's a jerk.
And this is like her brother, right? Or like
yeah,
her
brother-in-law. Yeah. The person she turned to when she needed help. He doesn't care. At this point, he's a cop. He wants to solve the case or something.
Nah, I think it's more like he's a man. He wants to get away from the... Like, shut the fuck up, bitch. I'm gonna go find your son and arrest him. So he goes back to the doc, and the doctor tells him the whole story of what had happened. You know, how, like, you know, alright, so here's where things get interesting. Let's just say that. So it turns out that Arthur and Felix had sort of an interesting relationship. Nothing gay or anything like that. Yeah, I mean, they get really close to saying stuff like that, but no, it's not, you know, it's just, really, it's more like, they're good friends, I'm trying to make sure I'm not getting ahead of myself,
Basically, the doctor is just kind of pacing,
Oh, okay, here we go. We're at the end.
Yeah.
So, So Arthur gets upset because Felix is dying, and Arthur demands the doctor that he wants the doc. And here's the big reveal of the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the amazing transplant. Arthur demands the doc put Felix's penis on it.
And
now the movie's not going anywhere near this, anywhere up to this point in the movie. Like this is sort of like the first time anything like this has been mentioned in the movie. So like for the uninitiated, you know, this is a huge shock.
It was a crazy shock, and the way he says it, because like I'll admit my thing up to this point, they'd been bringing up Felix and Arthur's friendship in very close terms up to this point. So he was very fond of him. He was very close to him. I thought it was going to be some weird thing involving some kind of transplant so that he would stop falling for Felix. And literally, Arthur just looks pretty much right into the camera and says, "I want you to put Felix's penis on me." with his creepy rapey face.
Yes. So the doc is, you know, he kind of like, "Oh, I can't do that. Like, there's a chance of dying." Of course, and Arthur's like, "I know about the abortions you perform. I know about the girl who died in this office."
So he starts to blackmail him, and the doctor is like, "Felix told you, damn it!" And he realizes he's caught now. He's got to do the penis transplant.
And the penis transplant surgery scene is just amazing. He's like, "I can't have anybody help me."
Yeah.
You know, like, he has to do this penis transplant surgery by himself, you know. So he sets Arthur up in this like, you know, looks like a gynecological examination table, really. You know, it's got like stirrups and shit. And I'm thinking about it, it's making me laugh. You know, so he pulls the blanket up, you know, from his feet up past his dick.
And Arthur is awake, we should note. Arthur's been given a local anesthetic, but he's awake.
And the entire transplant scene takes like 5 minutes.
But the whole time Arthur's complaining about how long it's taking. So he keeps saying, it'll be much longer.
The amount of like microvascular surgery that needs to take place to put somebody's penis on. You know, I mean, like, that's a surgery that should have taken, like, 9 hours, you know? And, like, a team of surgeons, you know, not just, like, one guy in a room, you know?
And really, all he does is does this sort of, like, screwing motion, some twisting.
Which my guess would be it was supposed to be him, like, you know, pretending to sew it on, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I think he just cut it off and sewed it on, and
but easily my favorite scene in the entire movie, and actually has some of the most iconic shots from the film too. Like, there's this really great shot that they used to use all the time, that they kind of shot from underneath the bottom of the table, where you just see Arthur's foot hanging off the end, and the doctor's, you know, doing his work, and that's a shot they use all the time.
Yeah,
you know, in the promotion of the movie. Because it's such a great shot, you know. It's really like there aren't very many like, well, you know,
well, like balanced or
I'm trying to use the term cinematography, but you know, you know, there are very few scenes where the cinematography is good in these kind of movies.
Yeah.
That's just one of those scenes where it's fucking brilliant.
It's amazing because you get an idea of what's going on in the scene.
If
you just saw the shot and the name, The Amazing Transplant, you'd be like, what? So
exactly.
I'm sure a lot of people saw it because of that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's all about shock. And, you know, I mean, granted, they didn't really, you know, they don't really talk about the dick, you know.
Yeah.
Like, too much of the promotion of the film. It's just, you know, The Amazing Transplant, they show that shot, and you're just like, well, what are they talking about? A lot of intrigue, but man, Jesus Christ.
It was a great scene.
It really is. It's the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost unfortunate that it's like it's so close to the end of the movie, but it really is just brilliant. So we get to Arthur, and he starts telling, you know, finally we catch up with Arthur, and he starts telling the story of, you know, how Felix had set him up to lose his virginity, you know, And but Felix, of course, being the ladies' man that he is, you know, hadn't waited. He starts fucking both the girls essentially. Now, I love this scene too because like this is like a lot of the like all the other flashback scenes have been in color, and for some reason this one was
black and white.
Of course, more than likely it's just because that's the only film stock they had for that scene.
Yeah, Felix is a hairy mofo, by the way. He's just like a bundle of hair, so like the black and white made it even worse. And he has these two ladies that he kind of he's making out with, and he lifts one up and sort of like carries her over to where he wants her or something at one point. He's obviously very good with the ladies.
Of course.
The whole time this scene is happening, Arthur is distressed
just
and
creepy.
Talking into his hands like one does when they're sort of sobbing, except that it's pretty much the same shot of him talking into his hands and rubbing his face.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of in slow motion, too, that they just keep cutting to. So you'll cut to the detective looking over at Arthur. And then when you cut back to Arthur, it's the scene you had just seen with him rubbing his face. And they muffled the ADR. I don't know if they did that on purpose.
Well, yeah.
So he's muffled, and it's clear his lips aren't even moving through most of the scene. So I thought this one was pretty funny for that. We also find out that Arthur... after the Felix incident, I guess, discovered his love for Mary or realized that he actually did love Mary a lot and wanted to stop hanging around with Felix.
Now, isn't it sort of revealed that Arthur had, in fact, killed Felix?
I was looking for that, and I thought that's what was going to be the twist kind of a thing at this point.
Yeah, I thought that Arthur killed Felix for his dick.
I thought so too. I just don't know how, because the doctor said he died of a mysterious virus.
Yeah, I really think maybe I have to watch it again at some point, but I really think that Arthur killed Felix so that he could get his dick.
It sounds about right. He was desperate for that dick. And that was.
Can't really relate.
he sort of made this statement actually during the scene where he's like, when he found out that Felix was dying, whatever that meant, like his first thought was that he wanted the dick. So I don't know. I'd like to. Maybe we should. We can do a follow up next episode.
Sure.
Because that threw me off a bit.
So Arthur starts talking about Felix and his like sexual proclivities. And it turns out that Felix would get just overwhelmed with like sexual emotion whenever he would see. Oh, and here's the trigger.
Here it is, everybody, listen close.
Whenever he would see golden earrings.
Golden earrings, and then we get.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say then we get like a flash to realize that it's like the color red in The Sixth Sense. You know, we'd seen it all along. We just didn't know it, kind of a thing.
Now, it does make me kind of wonder if Arthur or Felix would go sexually crazy if they heard the song Radar Love.
And why is that?
Because it's by the band Golden Earrings.
Oh, my lord. I'm starting to think we should just start remaking some of these movies and including our clever elements in.
Ah, yes. Very clever.
But yeah, essentially, Felix was getting rapey for gold earrings, and I guess because of the transplant.
I'm gonna cut you off for a second.
Yeah.
What I would do is instead of him getting rapey because of Golden Earring, you know, because of the band Golden Earring,
yeah.
Like I would just anytime he got rapey, I would just use the song, and then just like or use a Golden Earring song, and like and that would be my you know subliminal way of. Letting people know what the trigger was.
It's like the use of bluesy rock songs that have Moon in it in American Werewolf.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
I'm sorry, you were saying, though.
I was just going to say that I find it kind of funny, I guess, that Arthur got the rapey urges from the transplant. So essentially, the transplant transplanted... Felix Dick carried rapiness.
Well, you know, it's the... I love when movies do this. You know, like Like, you get an eyeball from a convict, and you see all the crimes they've committed. Or you get a hand from somebody, and it tries to kill you. Or, you know, it's ridiculous shit. And it's like, this one, like, he gets a cock from Felix, and he inherits Felix's rapiness. But he also inherits Felix's rapey Svengali-ness. So, is it necessarily an entirely bad thing?
Win-win. Actually, not really.
So Bill says, "Oh, I'm gonna help. You know, I'm gonna help Arthur out. You know," and he kind of walks off, and really just like it just closes with this ridiculous headline. like nothing else happens. It's just like a newspaper kind of shows up with this ridiculous headline that says, "Trial ends. Jury finds Arthur Barlin," and then the verdict is covered up by an ashtray. It's like,
and I investigated that ashtray picture, and it almost looks like it says not guilty, but not enough to actually convince me that it does. So they take away the final twist from us. I guess we're supposed to use our own imagination.
I don't want to use my imagination. I want to spoon feed it to me. So that's the amazing transplant.
Yeah, my note at that point was, what was the point of that for the newspaper?
Yeah, the problem is the last like 30 seconds of the film kind of kill the entire movie before that.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you're going on this whole murder mystery, and you find out all the details, but then you don't find out what happens.
Yeah,
like does Bill, does Arthur get his comeuppance? Does he get away with it? You know. Nothing at all.
There you go. That's the amazing transplant.
So that's the movie. You know, real quick, do we have any shout-outs we want to do this week?
I'm just going to do a shout-out to, since I've already brought it up earlier, to all the furries. I know a couple of them have started listening, so I'm going to give them some love that they tell all their friends to listen too. I think that's it for me. How about you?
I'm just going to give love to the second unit, and, I got nothing really, you know. No Budget Nightmares is now officially part of the Second Unit Podcast Network.
Oh, sweet. And yeah, I've been listening, that's been my week, has been listening to No Budget Nightmares.
Yeah, what was the one, you had made the quote on that one about, I forget what movie it was that I said that on, but it was the Merry Fucking Christmas and Fuck Your Snowman.
It was the one after Barely Legal Lesbian Vampires, I think.
But I don't know which one that was. I don't pay attention to my own shows.
You should. I think it was Duck.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
I think it was Duck, the Carbine High Massacre. Very entertaining. I'm going to do a shout out to your other podcast then. I'm going to say, if you like this show, you should listen to No Budget Nightmares with Mo and Doug Tilley.
Doug Tilley.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. And you guys have, I don't know, I want to say almost as much charisma as we have. But and Doug can find me because he lives near me. So
I treat all of my shows.
Yeah, and it's lots of fun. So if you love listening to movie guys talk about awesome movies, no matter how good or bad the movies happen to be, check out No Budget Nightmares.
Yeah, Duck is the one after. I just looked it up. Episode 7
is Duck. It's a great line. How do we always end up in this strange place at the end of every episode?
That's how they all happen. Hey, you want to hear something kind of awesome?
I do.
I do mention the show. I got approached by Film Threat Magazine, not magazine, but the website, to be involved in an article that's going to be posted on there for a feature that they do called The Bootleg Files, written by a guy named Phil Hall, who is awesome. So that's kind of exciting.
Sweet, that's really cool.
Yeah, I did a short film for a short film fest that took place last week.
Yeah.
I guess even when this comes out, it would still be considered last week.
Yeah.
But and he really liked the piece that I did, which is on YouTube. If anybody's interested, it's called Snack Bar.
Snack Bar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it fits into the show perfectly because I use a lot of the intermission film clips that I use for the intermissions on this show.
Cool.
You know, I used a lot of those to make it. And he's really fascinated with, like, found footage, and he thought that it was really, really neat.
Sweet. You should link Snack Bar in our description.
I'll post it onto the fan page, yeah. So if people want to watch it. I mean, it's all it really is. It's just like a musical montage of all these, you know, like, intermission clips.
Sounds cool to me. And it does suit our intermission.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so that's exciting.
Sweet.
But anyway, that's that.
That's that. It's been fun. Do we know what we're doing next week, or are we just going to leave it a surprise?
No, next week, this is official.
Mm.
I have not announced this yet. We are going to do God Monster of Indian Flats.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I love giant mutant sheep films.
Nice, so we're getting back to our first episode approach with the giant monster attack movie.
Yeah, but this is actually a something weird giant monster.
Oh, sweet.
So I will get that to you, and we will watch that, and it will be awesome.
It will be awesome. Like all our movies are awesome. This movie was awesome.
It was, yeah, it's a great movie. I mean, the last 30 seconds kind of kill it,
yeah.
But the rest of it is cool enough that it's fine.
Totally, and if you like rapey faces, and being creeped out by, like, a guy on a screen staring at you, this is your movie.
Well, I will definitely make sure to post my picture of my rapey face.
I will do the same, I'll do that right after we're done here.
I can't do it. I'll have to do it tonight.
Okay.
But I'll do it before the end of the week.
Cool.
All right, man.
All right. So I will talk to you soon.
Peace.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Something Weird This Way Comes. If you enjoyed anything you heard tonight, you can purchase all movies, intermission clips, or commercials directly from Something Weird at somethingweird.com. You can follow Something Weird on Twitter at @SWVOnline. Let us know what you thought of tonight's episode either on our Facebook page, facebook.com/somethingweirdpodcast, or email us at somethingweirdthiswaycomes@gmail.com. On behalf of that cuddly Canadian room, this is Mo. Good night, everybody.
Oh, God, this ain't the best centennial anybody ever had!
Brought to you in stunning, monophonic, low fidelity.
This podcast is a proud member of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. We've got
Drunk on VHS,
Film Reviews from the Basement,
The Aftermovie Diner,
The Cold Couch,
Something Weird This Way Comes with Rue and Mo,
and
The Dead End Driver Naked.
The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Shit, look out! Zombies!